And welcome to episode 16 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we will eventually be covering season 1, episode 13, which is titled, What's Past is Prologue. Now, I say eventually because we actually have quite a bit of feedback remaining from last week's episode. So let's open hailing frequencies. All right, so first bit of feedback comes from Jojo Leb, which came in our feedback form at goldenspowermedia.com/feedback. I have been listening to your podcast regularly and have enjoyed your commentary on the latest episodes of Star Trek Discovery. I have been pretty disappointed with the show thus far, but I do enjoy your sideways take on the show and the fact that you like the show, but also critique it fairly. Well, thank you. What does Jojo Leb mean by sideways take, you think?
I don't know.
At first, I was kind of ticked that the writers seem to have little respect for the franchise. I don't really care about departures from canon, quote unquote, but I really didn't care for the very dark, foreboding, apocalyptic tone of the show. The thing that unified all previous iterations of Star Trek and really made it very different from most other science fiction shows is the optimism for the future. In my opinion, that started to fall away with the J.J. Abrams reboot. In the present version, it is almost completely absent. This is one of the reasons that I was puzzled by the choice of having the Discovery go to a mirror universe. One, the mirror universe device is pretty awesome, but has already been overused. And more importantly, two, it only works when you can show a stark contrast between the lofty ideals and consistency of the Federation and contrast this with deceptive and erratic nature of the Terran Empire. If the Federation is corrupt and citizens thereof behave in a capricious and self-serving manner already, the whole thing falls flat. Moreover, I believe that the writers of Star Trek Discovery have gotten lost in character descriptions, twisting their plot twists, overspending their budget on CGI, and overemphasizing expensive costumes, makeup, and sets. This leaves us with little in the way of good science fiction or memorable characters. It's hard to describe the Star Trek Discovery characters in the same depth that you might Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, etc. And can you think of any memorable taglines of any of the Star Trek Discovery characters? Think about who said, "Make it so. Fascinating. I'm a doctor, not a blank." Or the engines that just, I should say it this way. The engines that just can't take it. Try to describe Kirk or Picard and then try to describe Burnham. Trust me, in a few moments, you will find yourself just describing what she looks like. It's a little easier with Lorca or Stamets, but there's still a lot of superficiality because we really don't know what makes the Star Trek Discovery characters tick. I'm less concerned with the quote-unquote Trekness at this point and more concerned about just watching really good science fiction. Shows like the Battlestar Galactica reboot and Dark Matter do a better job. Where there's character and story, you are more willing to forgive inconsistencies and iffy sci-fi. I think that's how Orville gets street cred. In spite of its goofiness and first-glance superficiality, they are telling real stories and the characters actually have some depth. To vent, I suppose, I started to write IMDb reviews of the episodes. I won't reiterate them here, but They are under the name Jojo Leb. That's J-O-J-O-L-E-B. If you have a chance, tell me what you think. Well, Jojo Leb, thank you for that feedback. I appreciate the fact that you think that our reviews of, the episodes are fair and that we do critique. And that's kind of what we've always done in our other podcast. And I think they're getting around to that optimistic trek. And I think we finally see some glimpses of it in this past episode. Like, if anything, you could take the Saru speech as kind of like the stepping stone for the Star Trek that we're used to. At least that's how I'm kind of taking it. And I think a lot of people have criticized the show because it didn't feel like Star Trek, and Lorca didn't feel like a Starfleet captain. Well, as we know, guess what? He wasn't a Starfleet captain. And, that certainly skews things, I think. But, I think, we've only got two episodes left this season. And I think I want to reserve anything about the show when it comes to, is it, Trek or not or whatever, until it's done. But, that said, I haven't exactly held this back. I mean, I love this show. In fact, I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to think this is like the best show I've ever seen. Not just Trek. I'm talking like the best show I've ever seen. But I can still say that and criticize the heck out of it. So, because it isn't perfect. What do you think?
About
Jojo Leb's feedback, anything that I said or that he or she, I don't know. I assume Jojo's a woman, but I don't know.
I think if you look at the first season of, especially Next Generation, I mean, it's almost painful to watch, even though I love that show. Going back and watching it, I'm like, oh my gosh. So I know that TV is different now, the way that it's made and everything. I mean, almost every single TV show back then, 20 years ago, whatnot, took a little bit of time to find their groove, I guess. Now it's kind of, you have to hit the ground running, but I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. So I think that honestly, not being able to describe anything about Burnham other than her looks is not necessarily anything right now yet, I guess, is what I would say. I think it's also, you were talking about Saru's speech is how, I guess, makes you think of Star Trek or whatever. I feel the same way when Burnham said, "We would have helped you get home if you had asked."
I agree. Yeah.
Because it's totally true.
Yeah. That's
how Starfleet is.
Another fantastic example of it.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much.
And I think we have to be cautious in comparing some of the characters that, we have gotten to know over decades versus a show that just started in September. We don't know these characters as well as even the Enterprise characters, because they had 96 episodes. The original had 79 plus the animated plus the movies. Certainly we know them well. And of course, all of the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, all of those had 170 episodes plus. So anyway, it's difficult to compare those characters against the characters that we see in this show. We don't know them as well, and we're not going to know them as well. So we have to keep that in mind. I think we've got a lot to go especially the next couple episodes. And I think the next couple episodes are going to be pretty good, and we'll get to know the characters even better. All right. Shall we move on to Fred?
Sure. All right. Fred from the Netherlands says, "Dear Brian and Ruthie, I was indeed a little amazed by no reaction to my audio feedback last week, but it's nice you bring it up yourselves unexplained. I had expected a reaction to my general remark about what the internet buzz does with my feelings during watching. For instance, that it even made me change my no for eating Kelpien to a yes, only because it was one of the few things that really did surprise me. Whereas a lot of other things didn't surprise me anymore because everybody is speculating about those things, such as Tyler equals Volk, there will be a mirror universe and they will go there. Lorca is from the mirror universe. Georgiou is Empress. Mirror Michael is brought up by Georgiou and not by Sarek, etc. This also made me realize that it must be much more difficult for filmmakers in the era of internet and social media speculations to really surprise its audience. Talking about predictions, let's spoil myself and others, perhaps. Everybody is questioning the bright sphere of light and energy under the Empress' ship. I think that it is a kind of energy source that is also responsible for the light sensitivity of the Mirror Universe people. Greets. Love your podcast, Fred."
And it's worth saying that he's been giving these fantastic screen captures of some of the scenes, and I noticed just before we started recording that he sent a bunch through Twitter again. And it's worth saying that Mary Chifo, who plays Laurel, retweeted one of his images, and she even took it as her new Twitter cover. So that's pretty cool, I think. So yay, Fred.
Yay.
All right, so a little bit of peeling the covers and opening up the little thing. We goofed last week. Well, I'm going to say I goofed. It's my fault. We didn't play Fred's feedback when we recorded Monday night. It was a stupid thing, and I missed giving myself a reminder in the show doc, and Ruthie had not even heard it. So what I ended up doing was I put it in after, and that's why we never really gave any feedback to what you said last week, Fred. So I goofed, and we couldn't get back together to record something, and I didn't want to delay the release of the podcast, you know, any longer than I had to. So anyway, that's why. I'm sorry. We'll do a better job. Sorry. Yeah. But the one thing, and you brought it up in this feedback as well, the whole thing about, the internet and how it changes, you know, how you feel about an episode. I mean, for me, I kind of analyze the TV that I watch anyway. I kind of always have. I like the fact that I hear, stuff, because a lot of the stuff I pick up on, but I don't pick up on everything. I don't think anybody does. So I don't know. I kind of like it. I don't feel spoiled, but it is kind of a different viewing experience than it was even, say, with Enterprise when that was on. Because by then, there was the internet, and I kind of, maybe the very beginnings of social media, but certainly not, to the extent it is now. But it's quite a bit different. I remember, watching, being on CompuServe during Next Generation and that. So, that was my first kind of pre-internet experience sharing stuff. But anyway, it's different, but I don't mind it. What about you, Ruthie?
Yeah, I agree that it's probably extra difficult for TV people to surprise their audience, but I think they do a good job for the most part. It's definitely different now, being able to connect to people and talk about your theories and whatnots, et cetera, so forth on the internet.
Watching TV, yeah. Well, I was going to say that watching TV is not as much of an isolated act as it used to be. I mean, you'd go and watch your favorite programs and, you know, like in the case of me, I'd say most of the time, you know, when Star Trek was on, I didn't really have friends that were into it as much as I was. I maybe had a couple of friends, but, you know, so it was always, it was a solitary type thing. And today it's not. So
yep. Anyway,
all right, let's move on. I wanted to highlight one thing. There was several things that Ken from Chicago on Twitter said, but there was one thing specifically. He said he was referring to our last episode. He said the episode where Brian disagreed with Ruthie, but when he rewatched the Star Trek Discovery episode, he made a discovery. He discovered that hashtag say with me, hashtag drum roll, please. And I don't have a drum roll handy, but I guess I could use this. Ruthie's right. Way to go, Brian. There's hope for you yet. And then he ends that tweet with a gif of the Estevez brothers in, what is it, Men at Work or something, doing a golf clap. That's Emilio and Charlie Sheen, of course.
Yep.
All right, I'll take the next one, too. Former co-host Adam. He said, wondering so many things about Lorca now. Here's one. Did the Gorn skeleton in his menagerie come over from the mirror universe? It would get around the continuity problem with TOS, supposedly being the Federation's first exposure to them. I suppose it would. I always thought that, you know, maybe that was Section 31, but, you know, we still know what the deal is with that. Like, that we don't have any explanation over the black badges that we saw in the third episode, whether that was Section 31 or something else. And I'm still curious about how Lorca, and I mentioned this last episode, in our universe, Mirror Lorca somehow got a lot of authority to be able to, like, run his ship or, you know, do whatever he wanted to. This was something that was expressed between him and Cornwell, that he thought that she was uncomfortable with the authority he had been given or something like that. And I had always thought that Section 31 had given it to him. But we don't know that, and we may never know. I don't know. So he must have got it somehow. Maybe he got it just because he was able to get Discovery, or I don't know. But as far as the Gorn, it could be, but I don't know how he could have brought it over.
I don't know either, because there was apparently a transporter malfunction, which is classic.
Yep.
But, I mean, depending on who Primeverse Lorca was, I mean, he might have already been set up to be in the position that he was in. I don't know. So
possibly. We don't know. All right. Why don't you do the last three? Pretty short.
Okay. Next, Doug says, Thanks for the pointer to the After Trek video of the Lorca clues. Very cool.
And that was included in the blog post for last week's episode.
Okay. All right. Next, Tilly says, I can't watch the episodes until Monday evenings, so I always miss the feedback deadlines, but I wanted to pop in to say that I'm loving this second half of the season. So much is happening, and I love that the mysteries are slowly revealing themselves, and I love how the reveals are just as surprising and intriguing as the mysteries are. They're doing a great job. 10 out of 10 bad dinner dates with Mom. And then there are a whole bunch of faces.
And then one more?
Stefan says, I guess about last week still, forgot to rate this episode 7 out of 10 easy.
All right. Well, we are done with the feedback from last week. So now it's time for season 1, episode 13. What's past is prologue, which I keep thinking of past prologue, which was an episode of Deep Space Nine. I think that was the third episode or possibly the second. But anyway, written by co-executive producer Ted Sullivan, who was on After Trek last night, and directed by, and I hope I get his name right because I butchered it last time, Olatunde Osunsanmi. I screwed it up. Osunsanmi.
Olatunde Osunsanmi?
Yes. Again, Ruthie's better at pronunciation than I am. All right. Well,
there are actually quite a few episodes of various TV programs that have had some variation of what's past is prologue.
I bet
as a title to their to an episode of the show. I did a Google search of past is prologue episode titles and like episode of TV show titles or whatever. And there were a few that came up. Let's see.
Any of
there,
that?
Of course, the Deep Space Nine that you were talking about. There is, I don't know if you remember the show Defiance.
Yes.
That had an episode titled Past is Prologue.
The reason why I reacted that way is I think I remember that episode.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, but I think that might be the only sci-fi type shows. There are a lot of other ones. It obviously refers to a quote from The Tempest.
Right. I didn't know what play it was, but I knew it was Shakespeare.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's The Tempest. Hmm. And one of the side characters that I didn't really like. Said it. So.
All right. Well, I don't really have any detail about the episode other than I'll say watch After Trek because it was really good this week. Jason Isaacs is pretty funny. Say that. But I will give one thing from last week, and it's something I posted on the Facebook group. It is a compilation. It was on IO9, and was actually a collection of tweets from Jordan Nardino, who wrote the episode last week, and it gives a detailed explanation of all of the names and titles of Emperor Georgiou, which I gave her her name last week, but I did not give her title. So the full thing is Her Most Imperial Majesty, Mother of the Fatherland, Overlord of Vulcan, Dominus of Kronos, Regina Andor. It's funny, there's nothing for teller. But Emperor Philippa Georgiou Augustus Iaponius Centaurius. And the two things to bring up there, Iaponius is apparently Japan, and Centaurius had to do with Alpha Centauri. So,
and Augustus, the Roman Empire.
Anyway, I suggest taking a look at that article, or just looking up Jordan Nardino on Twitter, because it's really interesting. He gave a detailed explanation of each one and why it's there. I thought it was so thoughtful, and really shows you how much thought they're putting into this show. All right, well, let's get down to it. What did you think of What's Past is Prologue?
I really liked it a lot. What did you think?
Oh, I thought you were going to give me a rating.
You didn't ask me for my rating. You asked me what I thought.
Okay. All right. I loved it. I loved it very much. Thought it was one of the best things that I've seen. I think I've already watched it 8 times.
Wow.
So.
That's a lot of times.
Yep. So I give it a 4. No. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'll give it my rating. I give it a 9.8 Smiling Mirror Landrys. Because I couldn't help but notice, and they mentioned this on After Trek as well, she actually smiled more than once. But I got to say, in both universes, she is a very, what's the word? Kind of not a very nice woman, I guess you could say. Although she seems slightly nicer in this universe, which is odd.
Yeah.
About you? What's your rating?
I'm giving it 212 days in the agonizers.
212 days out of 10?
No, I have like 212.
Oh, does that mean, so you gave it a 10?
I mean, not all the way a 10, because I have a hard time giving anything a 10. But yeah, like a 9.9, I would say, probably.
Yeah, I didn't have much fault with this episode. I mean, the only things that I had to dock it is stuff that James talks about in his nose. So, because I think he nailed it. So for his, he actually gave kind of a long, drawn out rating. James says, rating this episode is going to be 7 ever-increasing Lorca Southern drawls. I so much wanted to rate this one higher, but I'm trying to wrap my head around this show's vision all of a sudden and where it fits with others. And my recommendation to him, I told him this on Messenger. I said, I think you just need to give it time. But before I forget, I want to thank James because he has been helping out, especially collect the feedback on Mondays and post it in our show doc. And he actually did a lot of the work for this week. So thank you, James.
Yeah, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Clint, what did Clint have to say?
Clint says, I'll throw it out there. This may be the best episode of any Star Trek series. Action, drama, inspiring speeches, great writing, acting, directing, and much more. Then he left out a word. He will something that Star Trek is back to writing episode for an ensemble instead of individual characters. And then he says, I give episode 13, 10.5 phaser blasts out of 10.
He liked it. I don't
know. Yeah.
Mark Decote gave it 9 out of 10 no-win scenarios. And he said that he was going to give it something else, which we'll hear in the feedback.
All right. Kim says, I give this episode 8 swords through a black-hearted Lucius Malfoy.
Awesome. Yeah, and welcome, Kim, to the Facebook group. You just joined, so welcome. Rick says, I'll give it 9 out of 10 broad swords to the back.
Nice. Fred from the Netherlands says, I give this episode 9. Fred doesn't know what to say out of 10.
That's a good one.
I hear you. There are lots of times when I'm in the same boat.
All right. It's time for our yeses.
Yes.
All right. And we got a bunch of yeses, whole half dozen of them, from Ken from Chicago via Twitter. He starts and he says, Lorca's shipwide speech, which he says, hashtag make empire glorious again. Then he says, poetry slammed, no elaborate death trap, which was kind of funny because then he ended up getting the death trap. Then he says, ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you Captain Saru. Finally, the whole crew is featured leading to Saru's speech. And then the exchange, I'm where I need to be. And then I have to say, I loved hearing this too, the way Saru said, fire! Georgiou brought a knife to a gunfight. She's the hidden dragon. And then last is Burnham just cannot follow orders. And it was awesome. No one left behind again.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. James gives some yeses. He says, action, action, and more action. Saru's transition into captain is now complete. He's stepped up and taken charge. If we ever meet the Kelpian apex predator, we're all doomed because he's done formidable prey. Georgiou is back, at least for a while.
Yeah, that scary apex predator, man, has got to be the scariest predator in any universe. Fred from the Netherlands has a few as well. He says, Saru's way of commanding, the duplex fight of Lorca Georgiou and Burnham Landry, and again, the beautiful lighting of this episode, although episodes 11 and 12 were better. And then note, he says, I will select 10 screenshots again. I can use some of them if I want to, but he will, if you go to his Twitter at it's petrified_Fred. And then if you look at moments, you will see a moment with the his images for this week. And I know he's already put them out there on Twitter. So, all right. Now it's time for our yeses, and I will start with Georgiou's 180-degree kick to Lorca's face. Did you see that kick?
Yeah, I had to put that under no. such a thing is not possible. There's no way you can get enough power to do any kind of damage in a kick that is going against your... It's just not physically possible that with any amount of power. I don't doubt that she could kick that high because she obviously clearly did, but that was a Hollywood stunt kick if I ever saw one.
And I wondered
it looked cool, but
yeah.
I was like, ugh.
And I wondered if Georgiou had any like cyborg or changeling injected into her. So that she could make that kick. Because, yeah, it was a bit of a suspension of disbelief, but I thought it was cool.
Sure.
All right. Do you have any yeses?
I liked Michael's escape. She did the slide move.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, it's so cool.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. That was kind of a diehard moment. And it's funny because apparently Ted Sullivan kind of grokked some of Die Hard when he was writing this episode. And it was they mentioned on After Trek, you could see, like, you know, say, hey, Lorca, you know, let's get together, have a few laughs, or whatever McClane says in the first Die Hard.
What does he say? I don't know. I can't remember what he says.
Yeah.
Come to the coast, drink a few beers.
I would have to say another one was the rescue, which I guess Ken from Chicago kind of said, but I thought that it was cool, although makes me wonder how the heck, you know, what happens next with Burnham rescuing Georgiou, which, if you remember a couple episodes back, I had wondered if that was going to happen. I didn't see it coming, actually. No, well, kind of did.
Did you predict that?
No, I meant at the moment it happened, I didn't see it coming until maybe
30
seconds before.
Oh, I knew she was gonna. I was like, there's no way she's gonna leave her behind. There's no way. And then, yep.
But the thing is, you know, it's like, well, I mean, can she act Federation-like? Or is she gonna take one look at Saru and start to salivate?
That's funny. I mean, no, it was obviously an impulsive and not very... I wrote down that I knew that she would grab Philippa, and I also knew that Philippa would not thank her for it.
Yeah. What have you done to me?
Mm-hmm. Because she's obviously had interaction with people from the Federation before, so she's familiar with how they operate, I assume. And so I would think to her, you're not really doing me any favors, is what I would think she would think.
Yeah, I guess.
I can't believe you didn't see that coming. I totally...
I saw it coming, but I didn't... it's like I did, but I didn't, I guess. When it happened, I guess I wasn't terribly surprised. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But I thought she was going to sacrifice herself, or she was going to, you know, go down in a blaze of glory like she was talking she would. But anyway, I'm not sad about it at all. In fact, although I see no possible way that this could happen, it would be kind of cool if in season two, it's former Emperor Georgiou as the captain of the Discovery. I can't see it happening, but anyway.
Yeah, I would not think that would be cool. I would think that's way too far-fetched to fit.
Oh, I know it is. I know it is. I can't see it. I can't see it happening. I think we're going to have Captain Saru now, but you know, whether or not Georgiou's going to have a lasting presence on this show, I think it would be kind of cool. I just don't know where she would fit. And I don't yet know where, like, Laurel and Tyler/Vok will fit. For that matter, I don't even know if Tyler is alive at this point, because we didn't see him this week. I assume he is, but.
Yeah, he's alive because he chose not Klingon last time, remember?
Right. I assume he's alive. I don't know. Do you have any more yeses?
Let me see here. Oh, yeah. I'm giving a yes to the $5 word that Lorca used.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about.
Which one is that?
I didn't write it down.
Well, then I'll tell you. It was indecorous.
Indecorous. Thank you. Yeah, that was definitely a $5 word. And what does indecorous mean for inquiring minds?
Lacking decorum.
Ah.
Because indecorous is a form of decorum.
Anything else?
Yeah, no, I don't think I have anything else.
I will, I guess give a yes to the crew acting like a Starfleet crew. And I think we really did see a transformation, a full transformation of Saru, to really act like a Starfleet captain, like the Starfleet captains that we have all grown to love. He really did seem to fit the description this time around. And I love that. All right, shall we move on to nose?
Yep.
No!
All right. Well, James has three no's that I have to agree with. His first, he says, Lorca being dispatched. I think they've killed off a character that could have rivaled Khan as the ultimate nemesis. Jason Isaacs' performance is going to be greatly missed on this show as well. I think they may have written themselves into a corner with what they were going to do with him, since they really couldn't keep him and Georgiou alive. Or was it just other obligations that Isaacs had causing him not to be able to remain on the show? I don't know. What do you think about all of that?
I don't have an opinion.
I think that he will be missed. I hope that he can, come back, but I don't know how that would even happen. You know, assuming that the Prime Universe's Lorca is in fact dead, you know, or if he somehow wasn't killed by the mycelial core, if he somehow, you know, got
the transporter malfunction.
Yeah. I had wondered that. Or if he had been like Culber, had been kind of like put into the core somehow on a part of the network. Other than that, you know, I can't really see how they would bring him back, but
yeah, I don't know.
I have to say he's been fantastic on this show. Emmy, I think, deserving. I'm sure he'll never get nominated, but he was so good on this show that I think was Emmy caliber performance.
Yep, I agree. He was really good.
Yeah. Secondly, he says, no more looks at Defiant and a possible retrofit through the years. It's been there. It appears that it was really just a plot device to stir confusion on where the narrative might go. Well, I am kind of sad that we didn't see the Defiant, but at the same time, it may have opened up cans of worms that the writers didn't really want to open. You know, like comparing the look of Defiant versus, you know, the look of Discovery and all that, the things we've talked about many times before. I would have liked to have seen it too, but I'm not heartbroken about it. Lastly, he says, we also didn't get to see any mirror Discovery in the Primeverse. It may have been a fan service, but I think it could have been interesting to see what they were doing. Well, we don't know for sure that they were there. We can assume it. I mean, based on the fact that, you know, when the Discovery kind of did its jump, that it split into two. So, you know, it's possible. But at the same time, though, there's nothing that we've seen in this mirror universe that would confirm that the ISS Discovery had a spore drive in it. You know, because that's what we thought until we find out this episode that, in fact, you know, well, we knew from last episode that Stamets was on the Pallas ship, and it turns out that the Charon had, you know, a mycelial power, basically all of its power was coming from the network, sucking the power out of the network. So it doesn't make a lot of sense that the ISS Discovery would have a spore drive. So anyway, I don't think we know whether that they were in there or not, but maybe we'll find out next week. Who knows? Maybe the ISS Discovery has been wreaking havoc in the Prime Universe for the last 9 months. Who knows?
Who knows?
All right. Fred also has a no. He says, the way Lorca came to the Prime Universe, by a simple ion storm transporter malfunction? What the heck? Sounds like a bad joke. No mycelial network? No space folding like the Defiant? Well, it's actually something that Mark brought up as well. I think I'll hold off saying anything about that until we get to the voicemail. That's it for our listener knows. Do you have any knows?
The circling back around to sensing death. I kind of thought that was sort of lame. I was like, and the kick that looked cool, but was clearly a choreographed movie kick that would provide nothing but looking cool. Because it's impossible to have any power if your limbs don't actually move that way.
It's probably in Michelle Yeoh's contract. Because there certainly were a lot of, like, you know, Hong Kong martial arts moves in those scenes. You know, especially that last fight scene. But
there definitely were. And I'm sure that she is also aware of the fact that that's a movie kick, not really a real, you're not going to knock anyone out doing that. No. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You cannot bend your leg past your head that way. So no matter how high you can kick, if you can't bend your leg past your head, you're not going to be able to connect to someone who's behind you with any amount of force.
Yeah.
So that's the issue I have. And that's a tiny thing that I only know because I took Taekwondo for a while, and so it ruined me for movie fighting somewhat, because sometimes I see things and I'm like, like I said, it looks cool. It just takes me out of it a little bit because I know that that's not actually, there's a reason that people in real fighting fight the way they do, because moving the way, like if you move with the way that your body naturally moves, that's when you can get power in your movements and actually do damage.
Yeah. It's kind of like my initial reaction of the first two episodes of Westworld, which I know we talked about, if you recall. Mm-hmm. I'm in IT. I see a lot of problems that people have with their computers. And I couldn't get past all of the maintenance that would be required of those androids in the first two episodes. And it pissed me off. Mm-hmm. And it was a while. It was only after you'd seen the whole season, you know, and I had the full, like, 3 month trial of HBO Now that I finally went back and watched the last 8 episodes. That had the first two were available, you know, on a weekend, they had HBO available. So, you know, cause I just couldn't get over my hatred of it for the longest time. So I could totally understand your reaction there. And I did eventually love Westworld, by the way, listeners. So, and I say to a lot of people that this show has as much DNA, I think, to Star Trek as it does Westworld, because it has a lot of that kind of mystery and complex plot that I thought that Westworld had. So I've actually told a lot of people that hadn't, you know, sampled Star Trek Discovery yet. People that I knew that loved Westworld, like, I tell them that it's a lot like Westworld. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but all right. My two no's, and they're minor, but.
Well, before you move on, I was also going to say it doesn't make me hate anything. I just recognize the fakeness of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like when real life happens.
Takes you out. Yeah.
Yeah. Takes it just takes me out a little bit because I know it's, I know for a fact that it's just a movie kick.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like I'm going to rage quit the show or anything.
I should hope not.
I'm mad about it. I'm just like, oh.
Yeah. A minor thing to take you out. I agree. All right. Well, my two no's, and they're minor, both of them. You know, although I agreed a lot with what James said, Tilly getting rid of her straight hair. I like that hairdo that she had. That obviously, I guess that was a wig, but yeah. So Tilly went back to her kind of very curly hair. I thought that the straight hair was very flattering. So anyway, she's back to old Tilly. The other one, and I would say this was more, what the heck was going on with that war map? Like, how was that getting failed? Like, how was that? It's not like they were even getting any data from the Federation. So how was that map being drawn and changing? Did you understand that, or did you have any thoughts about that?
I guess when I watched it, I just assumed that they were seeing the last 9 months. Cause I mean, if you were looking at it, the boundaries of the war and whatnot kind of morphed around.
Yeah, it did.
So I thought, well, that must be reflecting how the last 9 months have gone. Cause if you looked at it, it showed at the beginning of it, it showed the, I guess the boundary between Klingon and Starfleet space, and it slowly moved in, like, into Starfleet space, sort of overtaking Starfleet space. So that's how they knew the war not going so great.
Right. I just wondered how that data got populated. That's all. It was a little odd, but I didn't mind the effect. I just couldn't figure out where.
Well, I don't have any idea really how they communicate through space. So I couldn't even begin to guess how they get any of their information. I just don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, it is time to open hailing frequencies again for this week. And our first is from our trusted voicemail person who makes our podcast better every week, Mark.
Hey, Ruthie. Hey, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here with my feedback for What's Past is Prologue. I give this episode 9 out of 10 no-win scenarios. On my first viewing, I was going to give it a 9 out of 10 maiden voyages, but on my rewatch, no-win scenarios won out, so that's my rating. Now, I have to say, after all this season, I still don't understand the Marsilian network. I have no idea why the Marsilian network dying would end all life as we know it. Now, maybe we don't need to know that information, but I wish I would have got a little bit more explanation out of that. At least we did get an explanation on how Lorca ended up in our universe. A transporter malfunction? Huh, I guess Bones had it right. Not only do transporters tear you apart to your individual atoms, shoot them across the nethers, and put you back together, but now there's the added worry that they might actually throw you into another universe. Now, I really enjoyed Saru in this episode, his talk, his demeanor. If he remains captain of Discovery going forth, I will have no problem following him, especially the way we saw him today. He took command. He had very little hesitation. He thought about things when he had to. Overall, he was exactly what a captain needs to be. Now, I'm going to give my turbo lift up and down moments before I go on to my overall discussion of the episode. Turbo lift down, I'm a little disappointed that we didn't get to see Lorca freeing his people. We know that he killed that captain of the guards or whatever when he got out of his prison chamber there. But was there nobody else between there and where the rest of his crew or his people were? I would have loved to have seen that part. Another down moment is I really don't understand how Lorca can say that Michael is integral to his future plans. Is she? I don't understand how. Or is it just he still feels something for her because he was in love with the mirror Michael? I mean, there's something there. He even attacked Landry when Michael and Landry were fighting and Landry was getting the upper hand. Lorca hit her with the sword. So was that just a case of love makes you blind? I don't know. My turbo lift up. Speaking of Landry, it was nice to see her back. I wasn't expecting that. We didn't really get to know her character very much. She was very abrasive at the beginning of the season before she died. But it was nice to see the actress back in this part. Now, another up moment were those guns. The way the people would just blow up in those red filaments. That was really cool. And Lorca being killed by a sword. Oh, I geeked out there. I'm a huge sword fan. I've got a collection. I've got close to 30 swords in my house from all sorts of movie replicas and all sorts of other swords. So I was geeking out whenever we saw the Emperor's sword there. But the fact that she actually used it to kill him in a show like Star Trek that usually relies on phasers and stuff, that was really cool. And my final turbo lift up is that they extended the season. In case anyone had forgotten, Star Trek Discovery was originally supposed to be 13 episodes, which would have made this the season 1 finale. And as a finale, it would have been great. It was an amazing finale. But the fact that we still get 2 more episodes, I give that 2 big thumbs up, or as Brian and Ruthie say, yes! Now just some more thoughts about the episode. You know, I think we're done with the Mirror Universe, but I would love to know what the fallout is of the Emperor's quote-unquote demise and what happens to the Terran Empire in the Mirror Universe going forth. I know in other series we touch on it here or there, but I would love to know the immediate aftermath. But we probably won't get anything like that. Curious to know what that little greenish-blue dot that landed on Tilly's shoulder, what that's setting up for the future. And I'm super excited to see what happens with the whole jump ahead 9 months, and it looks like the Klingons are winning. Now, you know from my past feedback, I haven't really enjoyed the whole Klingon side of the story. But when this reveal was presented, I thought to myself, this is cool. Although, I can't help but wonder, how were they able to update their war map if they had absolutely no contact, not even automated contact, with Starfleet? So I scratched my head about that. And my final thought, did you notice that after the successful transport, that officer told Saru that she's on board, not they're on board? Emperor Georgiou did mention earlier in the episode that she has a bracelet that makes her life signs undetectable. So other than Michael, nobody else knows that the Emperor is on board. And if she escapes or she runs out, they're going to have a hard time finding her. So I'm really curious to know what's going to happen with that. And what's going to happen when the Emperor finds out that Discovery is captained by the scrumptiously delicious Saru? I sure hope that the next 2 episodes keep going on the same pace that this one was. Well, that's it for my feedback. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the great work with the podcast. Mark from Ontario, out.
I'll just go right to it. Thank you, Mark, as usual. Well, actually, he brought up the map, too. I didn't catch that when I first heard it. But, yeah, well, I guess that is a mystery.
Yeah, but, I don't know.
Okay.
Chalk it up to they got it.
Yeah. So the Mirror Universe and transporters are a thing. Mark was saying that it was kind of lame. That's how he got over. But if I'm not mistaken, I didn't go back to watch it, but I believe that's how they end up in the Mirror Universe with, in Mirror Mirror. And I know that at least one of the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, it features a transporter. I believe that's how Smiley, you know, O'Brien gets Sisko to come back, because he does something to the transporter to bring him to the Mirror Universe. So this is already, you know, as they say, canon. So, you know, it's
not unprecedented.
Certainly not unprecedented. I wondered too about how this would cause the end of the world as we know it. Well, it's actually the end of life, the end of the all universes or whatever. I know that they had said that it connects all life or something. So I guess that's how, but you know, probably if we read the actual Paul Stamets's book, maybe we'd have a better idea. I don't know, but
yeah, I was kind of in the same boat. Like, how is that going to end all life and why?
So something Mark mentions, do we know, in fact, that the next two episodes are the two episodes that brought the season from 13 episodes to 15? Like, do we know that this episode was going to be the original finale? Or, you know, was it just one of those things that the way that they, you know, did the first two episodes, they realized they needed, you know, another two or something?
I would say it probably, because I mean, depending on when they got the news, how far along they were in shooting and all that kind of stuff. But it seems to me that like, if you take Star Trek The Next Generation, you could almost rearrange the order of the episodes for some of them, and it wouldn't matter.
Right.
But I don't think you can do that with Discovery. So I would say that up to this point, probably all of those episodes were already there, I guess, if you will. You know what I mean?
It does kind of fit that, you know, if this is going to involve, well, we already know it does involve time travel, because they're 9 months ahead of where they were. But, you know, is this going to involve them going back in time or something? We don't know. But, I mean, it does kind of make sense that these two episodes would be, you know, kind of their own thing. So it could be. Could very well be. And I would say that this could have very well been a finale. Like it had the feel of being a season finale, I thought. Could have very well ended up with, you know, the end of the season, them, you know, finding out that the Klingons had won and, you know, that they were 9 months ahead and all that stuff. So anyway, could have been. But I don't know. So originally when I heard you say it, I had my doubts, but now that we're talking about it, I wonder if you're in fact right, Mark. You wrote something down that I want to talk about as well. So why don't you say what you wrote?
Yeah. He said he wondered about the little dot that descends and lands on Tilly's shoulder and then disappears.
Yeah.
I was also wondering what the significance of that might be, because I don't think it was just nothing.
Well, one of the audience members for After Trek actually asked Ted Sullivan what the significance of that spore was. And his answer was, after being a little cagey, he said, tune in for season 2. So, you know, he could have just been joking, but I mean, it could end up being something for next season. Who knows? And it was kind of weird how it changed color, because it was originally, I think, blue, and then it turned to green.
Mm-hmm.
So
I saw that too. And did it disappear, or did it like soak into her?
I got the impression that it soaked into her. What did you think?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought, but I mean, it was kind of hard to tell, but I assume that it,
that she absorbed it. That was my thought. And, you know, I guess we won't know until next season or next episode, or maybe never.
Yeah, we'll see.
But anyway, Mark, as usual, thank you for your voicemail. Do you have anything else?
I don't think so.
All right. Next, let's move on to James. All right. James says, so I'm not completely sure how to feel with this episode. On one hand, it had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. And on the other, I don't know what to think of where things are going. As this episode ends, does Discovery exist on an island? Is this going to be the Star Trek that Scott Bakula should have captained and become a reboot of Quantum Leap? I'm assuming from the end of this episode that this is where the show is going, and the reason there's never a mention of Discovery anywhere else is because it's vanished from the Prime universe altogether. On one hand, we're getting new stories, but on the other, we're going to see a show whose entire premise is fixing its mistakes and trying to get the universe fixed. If that's the case, they've got a tough task ahead. I'm still enjoying, but I guess I'm really starting to long for it to find more of a place in, God, I hate this word, canon. And James, I hate that word too. I'd put the ending into my nose, or should I say,
no,
for this week. But to do that wouldn't really be fair, because it trashes the entire narrative, and I don't want to give up on a show that's so visually stunning and has impressive performances. I think I just need more time to let things sink in a bit. And I said earlier, I think you just need to give it some time of, you know, to see where the season ends, because essentially, you know, this has been designed as, you know, a one season story, so to speak. And we're right now, you know, 13 out of 15 into it. So we've got two more episodes to go, you know, see where things are going to take us at the end. And, you know, I'm reminded of season 3 of The Walking Dead. And I think you'll get this reference, because it was a lot of things from that season 3 that were amazing, that were excellent, that were well written, but it really ended on a bad note. And the show was kind of screwed up there for half a season until they finally, you know, spoiler, got rid of a character. I won't say who, but they left a character alive, and they had to wait a whole half season before they killed that character. And it really screwed up the ending. It took, you know, what was, I think, a great season and kind of messed things up. And it's certainly not considered as good of a season overall after that. So anyway, my point being, let's just see how things are in a couple of weeks. And then, you know, you can look at it with a more clear head. What do you think about what James said?
I agree with you. I think, although I don't hate the word canon.
You know what I don't like? It's not canon so much. It's when someone says, my head canon. Like, what, you're making up Star Trek to, you know, work it out in your head? That's crazy. That's stupid. There's enough Star Trek out there. You don't have to make anything up. So
it's true.
That's my take on it. All right.
All right. Kim says a lot happened and a lot of stuff was explained. So I feel like I need to watch it a few more times to grasp it all. But it was pretty entertaining. I particularly enjoyed the teamwork and leadership shown on the Discovery, as well as the alliance of Burnham and Georgiou. I loved Michelle Yeoh so much, I cheered when Burnham saved Georgiou, though Georgiou obviously doesn't feel the same. And as much as that Lorca needed to die, I really hope that's not the last we see of Jason Isaacs. His best line, I hate poetry. This show is fun.
Yes, it is fun. And I did like that line as well.
Mm-hmm.
Our next bit of feedback comes from Rick. He says, another great episode. The action was incredible. The story was great and certainly escalated quickly. Just like that, Lorca is no more, and our mirror universe adventure seems to be over. Once again, the Stamets-Culber stuff was touching. As Stamets was trying to find his way through the network, I found myself saying emphatically, the clearing in the woods, before he realized it. I think Saru cemented himself in the role of captain with his speech to the crew, as good as many Kirk or Picard speeches. And the twists keep on coming with Emperor Georgiou in the Prime Universe and a time travel wrinkle. I cannot wait to see how this gets resolved.
Yep. Okay. All right. We have feedback from Fred from the Netherlands again, which I will read. He says, hello, Brian and Ruthie. I came home late from work, so I watched episode 13 quite late. I have no time before your deadline to record an audio feedback anymore. So I am only giving some short written feedback about this dizzying episode. Questions. Will they put Georgiou in the brig with Laurel and Tyler? Are they going to use Georgiou, Laurel, and Tyler in their new situation? For interesting storytelling and character development, I think they will. Is Prime Universe Lorca alive? Will they try to go back in time to prevent the Klingons from winning the war? What's left of the Federation? And after recovery of the mycelial network and Stamets, can they use the spore drive again?
All right. Well, first one, will they put Georgiou in the brig?
I don't know.
I think they won't, but I can't say for sure. I mean, it's just an impression that I'm getting, but I could be just as much wrong as I am. Yeah, I could be right. So I don't have a lot of confidence in that answer of no.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will be using Georgiou, and I'm certain they will be using Laurel, whatever the condition of Tyler is in. I don't know if they'll be using him. But I have to think that they're going to use Georgiou, because if they're in as bad shape as it seems, and the Federation is losing the war, they're going to have to come up with something new. So I definitely think that they're going to use Georgiou. And of course, they have to be using Laurel. I mean, that just goes to, it stands to reason that they would. So I agree with you, Fred. They will be using them. Is Prime Universe Lorca alive? I don't think so. What do you think?
I don't think so either. I think he went down with the Bran.
Yeah. Will they go back in time to prevent the Klingons from winning the war?
I don't think they've won the war yet.
Yeah.
I think they are just winning.
I would agree with that.
But yes, I think they're going to go back in time.
I think they will go back in time as well.
Well, at least try. They're at least going to try. I don't know if they'll succeed.
Yeah. What's left of the Federation? Let's hope that there is something left of the Federation. Because, I mean, if the Federation is gone, if basically Federation's been obliterated, they're going to have to go back in time, because we know what is ahead, and what is ahead is a Federation that's flourishing. So the Federation can't be you know, extinct. You know, so that's that would be my take on it. And did you get to watch After Trek?
No.
There's a couple. Well, there was one specific little thing that we see for a scene for next week that was pretty telling, actually. I think for your last question, I think they will use the spore drive again. I have a feeling, though, that, you know, come the end of this season, the spore drive will be no more. And I wonder, I had this in my notes, I could see the season ending with the death of Stamets. And I don't like that idea, but it would kind of explain the lack of use of the spore drive. Because if he's the only one that could pilot the spore drive and they don't have any more tardigrade DNA, his death would make sense why they can't use it anymore. So I don't have a lot of confidence in that. I'm not making a prediction. I'm just seeing that could be a scenario that ends the season, and I don't know if I like it. So, what do you think about that? I would have to say that they're going to use it again. That for sure.
Yeah, I think they will, but I think something is going to happen to where they won't be able to anymore. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be the death of Stamets. I think it's going to be maybe the mycelial network is too far gone and they can't fix it, so they can't use it anymore.
Yeah, that would do it too. All right, our last bit of feedback that we got in time, it actually came in after the deadline, but was before we started recording, came from Andreas. So he says, I am so glad that I was wrong, and I'm happy about it. Last episode, I said that I couldn't believe that it was going to surprise me, but this episode was amazing. Loved every scene, and I cannot believe that we are not going to see Lorca again. Are we, though? I really love the fact that they took Discovery to places where the other Star Trek franchise hasn't been before. And I didn't put this in the rating section because I couldn't tell for sure this is what he meant. But I think what he says here is 10 out of 10 permanently.
All right.
Because what's written there doesn't quite make sense. But anyway, hopefully that's what you meant. All right. Well, we've got a few points that we never covered. Do you have anything specific you want to bring up?
I was kind of surprised that Lorca seemed to be even more xenophobic than Georgiou. So how did he manage to get along so well in the Prime universe?
Yeah, was something that I thought of, like, and something that Mark mentioned. I mean, did he look at his first officer each time and, you know, start to salivate? Mm-hmm. I want your ganglia. It does, I think, kind of make sense, though, that he would pick Saru as his first officer because he would want to pick, you know, a species that would kind of be submissive and, you know, kind of give him a wide berth so that he could, you know, kind of get away with the things that he was trying to get away with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that, and it was kind of effective, Lorca used a flash grenade, which normally isn't something we, you know, see that much, but it certainly seemed to blind Georgiou's guard and really, you know, took them away from, you know, fighting. But it makes sense because if they're all light sensitive, it would kind of affect them a lot more than it may in the Prime universe.
Mm-hmm. I still want to know why they're light sensitive. What caused that?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think it's anything that we saw in previous iterations. You know, so, and certainly not in Mirror Mirror. I mean, everything was as lit as, you know, the regular Enterprise. So I think this was something that they constructed for Discovery. I just don't know. I don't know, maybe the suns are different, or like something Burnham said, I think, in like the second episode, that, you know, even the light is different here. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just like how physics works in this universe, that the light is dimmer. I don't know, but it is curious, to say the least. So does that mean that there's other universes that are like much too bright?
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we basically covered everything that I had. Cause we talked about the spore on Tilly's shoulder, and I think we talked about Lorca as well, and whether or not he somehow is in the network. So I think that's all I had. Do you have anything else?
Just a couple of small, quick things. Did he call her Pippa?
He did. Yeah, I thought of Pippa Milton.
Mm-hmm. Also, I thought that the there was one part that was kind of a little too Star Wars-y about the, I'll, you know, make sure that the containment field, tractor beam / containment field is down, and I find your lack of vision.
Oh, yeah.
Your lack of faith. I mean, your lack of vision.
Yeah.
Continues to disappoint me. I don't know. Just got the Star Wars vibe for real on that little series of events, I guess. Not that it was bad or anything. I just thought that was kind of funny. I was surprised, honestly, that Georgiou was going to go along with the destruction of the core. Like, really? Okay. I guess she's in a what have I got to lose mode, but anyway. And I also thought that they took the throne room a little bit too easily, it seemed like.
Yeah, I agree with that. I did like that battle, though, the first battle, you know, with the shields. Yeah. And
that was really cool. And the phaser rifles lighting up.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a very cool battle.
I agree. I don't think I've got anything else, though.
We've got two episodes left, and I gotta say, it's like, you know, I will not say that this is a perfect series, but I am very impressed. I think that this last episode was may have been the best of the bunch so far. Certainly right up there. It's hard to top, I think. No 47s, although I did hear Starbase 46 is one off. Mm-hmm. To submit your feedback and connect with us, there are many different ways. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback to submit your text or audio. There's also a SpeakPipe widget there. You can call the voicemail, which is 304-837-2278. You can also send us email. Our Gmail is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most people send us feedback through our Facebook group. That's at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And we're also getting more activity on our Twitter account, which is good. That's at StarTrekGSM. The deadline for submitting feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Monday after the episode is aired. And if you don't get it in time, we'll, like we did this week, we'll cover it next week. One of the best ways to support us is to retweet us, share our posts when they come. Especially what I did this week is I posted using the Facebook Golden Spiral Media page, which I believe is at facebook.com/GoldenSpiralMedia, because those you can share. So if you have a friend who watches Discovery, tell them about our podcast and have us check, or have them check us out, have us check them out. Yeah, right. Another great way to support us is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple, which will direct you to all of the podcasts in the Golden Spiral Media Network. When you subscribe, you can help us out by giving us a rating or review. And we would like to thank Cluster Fract for his or her 5-star review from the UK. To find other ways to support the network, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The next episode is season 1, episode 14, titled The War Without, The War Within. And we don't know who wrote it or who directed it, but we do know who's on After Trek next week. That is the director of this past episode, co-executive producer Olatunde Osunsanmi. I think I still said that wrong. Osunsanmi. Okay. Justin Simeon, who I think has a Netflix show, Dear White People, I think it's called. And Saru, Doug Jones, will also be on. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.